underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Tayemba Jass's poetry serves as a bridge between slam poetry and other American verse traditions. His first collection, Leadbelly, an exploration of the blues musician Huddy Leadbelly Leadbetter's life, was chosen for the National Poetry Series. His second collection, Oleo, which celebrates the unrecorded and largely unknown black musicians and orators of the 19th and 20th centuries, won the 2017 Pulitzer Prize. It is a great pleasure to welcome Tayemba Jass to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us.
Great to be here.
Give us an idea of when you started to think about poetry in a creative way, in a way that you enjoyed and found your voice.
I did open mic in Chicago. I went to all kinds of open mics in Chicago. This place called Spices in Chicago, which is actually way back in the day, was the inspiration for that movie Love Jones. Then I did slam at the Green Mill in Chicago, the originator of the slam with Mark Smith. I was on two slam teams. Before that, I was in high school scribbling down lines on pieces of paper, and I just always kind of gravitated towards it, and just slowly culminated into the books that I produced, Leadbelly and Oleo.
So this could have manifested itself in other forms. It could have been a musical form. It could have been the written word, prose, but you stuck with this.
Poetry is what I believe I'm here to do. So that's how it manifested for me.
And I ask the question because so much of your work has to do with music. So I'm interested in how you found that thread and that path of saying, not only am I going to write poetry, but this is going to be what I'm going to write about, at least for the moment.
I think one of the reasons is because I am a big fan of the blues. I happen to, my second home is Chicago, and I was born in Detroit, then I spent about 18 years in Chicago, and while I was there, I just got to be immersed in the Chicago blues and met folks like Buddy Guy and Lefty Diz and Junior Wells, and that kind of just brought me into like the deep well of American music, which is filled with the blues. And I also realized that at a certain point that there's a connection in African American literature to the music and the literature. The music was our literature before we were allowed to read and write, before we were able to read and write without the pain of death being attached to it. Music was the literature. So it's deeply infused in the African-American literary tradition. And I just became intrigued at the many ways that those two traditions can merge and run in the same river.
When you work, especially, I mentioned Leadbelly, and even in the newest collection, is that an historical quest for you, or is it I assume ultimately it's a creative quest, but how much of that is an exploration and wanting to know more, or is it, this is what I know and I would like to share?
That's a good question. A lot of it is me figuring out for myself what the histories are, and being partially fascinated by the fact that by the way they happen, being somewhat, in particularly in Olio, somewhat frustrated with the fact that I did not know them before, and then wanting to share them so much with so many other people because I just think they're interesting interesting histories.
And mostly in Olio, unpublished work that had never seen the light of day.
You mean
as far as the songs, right? Much of the work had never been published prior to that.
You mean the songs?
The songs.
Well, most of the work had been, these folks' work had not necessarily been lost, but there were no actual recordings of the people that are included in Olio. In other words, the people in Olio had never been had audio recordings of their work created, except for one, and that was Burt Williams. So what interested me with the folks in Olio is that they represented that a kind of bridge between the days of slavery and the days when recording became a mass public phenomenon. So in the time in between when Black folks were creating music and creating art, between slavery and the dawning days of the 20th century around World War I.
So unrecorded and in many cases unknown or forgotten.
Forgotten.
How did they come on your radar?
You know, I did some of them were a little bit known, but I just kind of really plumbed, dug deep into their histories. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of research. I read a lot of books, and I ran across folks that had been some histories done about them, but not very much written about them in a kind of literary sense. So I was really interested in retrieving these folks' histories and their voices and putting them in more directly in a literary tradition and not just in the tradition of a historical treatise.
Tayemba Jess is our guest on this week's book show. The latest collection, Olio, is the winner of the Pulitzer Prize 2017. That's nice. That doesn't suck, does it?
No, it's been good. It's been good. It's been a real honor. A real honor.
The thing about the book too is that not only is it beautiful, but it's beautiful as an object too. It is beautifully published. It's beautifully put together, and I assume that goes into the whole art of it.
Yeah, you know, the book is published by Wave. They also published Leadbelly, and I was pretty fortunate in happening to be associated with Wave. In that there's not many publishers that would have four fold-out pages that are perforated and tear neatly out of the book, and I happen to be associated with them. They just do great craftsmanship on their work. And I thank you for that note towards the art of the book because I think that is what the book is about. It is partially about that connection that we have to the printed word. You know, there will be no electronic publication of this book. You have to actually hold it in your hands.
That does my heart good to know that. With that said, though, so much of poetry and obviously of music is the tradition, is the oral tradition. Mm-hmm. So These many of these are meant to be performed. These are meant to be spoken. These are meant to be shared as well. Mm-hmm. With that, I'm hoping you can start us off and read one or two.
I'd love to. This poem is about a musician named Blind Boone. And Blind Boone, John William Boone, was born in around 1865. His mother was a newly freed slave, and he, at 6 months of age, he caught encephalitis. That's brain fever. Essentially, your brain will swell, and if it isn't remedied, you will die. They had no such thing as antibiotics or penicillin at the time, and the only remedy that the doctor had for to relieve the swelling on his brain was removal of the eyes. So Blind Boone later on became a very famous piano player. And this poem is called Blind Boone's Blessings. Bless the fever in that night, in the sixth month of my life. Bless the fever, for it gave me sight. It swole my brain to fit God's gift. It brought the hand that would lift each eye from my infant skull. Bless the sweat, my baby ball. Bless the horse that hauled the surgeon through dusk's dark, half drunk and swearing, into mine. Bless the flame. It sterilized the metal of the spoon. Bless the path between lid and bone, slipped and slid by that instrument of my deliverance from sight. Bless the handling of the knife. Bless that night that gave me night, wrapped it round my bloody face, whispered how I could be grace notes, arpeggios, a piano roll of sound copying each note from everything around me. You see, I'm sure at first there was the hurt and the scalding pain. But then again, bless an infant's too short memory. All I know is what lies beyond light. I've learned this is what's right. For this one right here. Yes, bless the fever. Then listen close. Spare an ear to this piano and shut your eyes closed.
Tayemba Jess reading from Olio. I love the way you read that because it's almost a whisper. It's almost of an intimate sharing.
Yeah, I think that, you know, in writing this, most of the poems are in first person. So I'm trying to, they're persona poems, trying to be into the persona of the person who is talking. So I'm really interested in imagining them talking to us, you know, imagining if they were able to, you know, tell their story directly in front of us.
So in that way, you're giving them a voice.
Yeah, I'm stepping into their histories and assuming their voices. Yes.
That can be heady, can it?
Yes, and I think the way I try to approach it is to try and look at all the practicalities of their lives. I try to look at the, after reading everything I can about them, reading about the context of their lives, the difficult decisions that they had to make, the fears that they had, and weighing all of those things together and trying to step into the moment that they had in their life and imagining it. Yes.
When you're writing about a particular artist, do you want there to be an arc of the poems that you write about that particular individual?
Well, one thing I do try to take note of is the times when they had to make difficult decisions, or when they were under treatment distress, or the perspective about various conditions in their life. So I wouldn't say that I want to create an arc in their life, but I'm really more about trying to follow the arc that their life took.
Mm-hmm. So you want to reflect what they went through and the success and often the fact that the struggles that they went through either mm-hmm. before, during, and after.
Yeah, you know, I think that. Going back to the notion of the blues, that to blue a note is to bend a note. And in under difficult times in order to create a music that's unique to themselves, they blew the note of their difficulties and turned it into song.
Do you find that there is anything comparable in your writing?
Well, I would say for me, finding a path to writing has been one that's been filled with a lot of difficulties and a lot of self-doubts and like any writer, you know, trying to just get started on and looking at the blank page and trying to think about how to surmount the obstacles of the project or the poem that I'm interested in doing. And those are the type of things that I think I try to translate into the work that I'm producing.
What other individual would you like to introduce us to?
Let me see. How about... there's a series of poems for Edmonia Lewis, who was an African-American sculptor. She was a Black and Native American sculptor. Really, actually, one of the most, if not the most, successful African-American artist, visual artist of the 19th century. Born around 1845 in upstate New York, actually, and left the country at around the age of 20 to go to Greece and carve out stones for herself and become and make her own sculptures. Became, you know, very famous for a time. Sold $50,000 commissions for her work. One of her commissions was Hagar in the Wilderness. And, of course, it has Hagar from the Bible.
Right.
And it's, she's standing in the desert, so to speak, with a broken water jug. And this is a poem that's actually in the voice of the sculpture. So this is the voice of the sculpture, Hagar in the Wilderness, Edmonia Lewis, Marble, 1875. My God is the living God, God of the impertinent exile, an outcast who carved me into an outcast, carved by sheer and stony will to wander the desert in search of deliverance the way a mother hunts for her wayward child. God of each eye fixed to heaven, God of the fallen water jug, of all the hope a vessel holds before spilling to barren sand. God of flesh hewn from earth and hammered beneath a will immaculate with the power to bear life from the lifeless like a well in a wasteland. I made in the image of a God that knows flight but stays me rock still to tell a story ancient as slavery, old as the first time hands clasped together for mercy and parted to find only their own salty blessing of sweat. I have been touched by my God in my creation. I have known her caress of anointing callus across my face. I know the lyric of her pulse across these lips, and yes, I've kissed the fingertips of my dark and mortal God. She has shown me the truth behind each chiseled blow that's carved me into this life, the weight any woman might bear to stretch her mouth toward her one true God, her own beaten marble song.
Tyamba Jess, reading from Olio. I'm curious as to, did you know right away that you were going to write that or approach it from the perspective of the sculpture itself, or is that playing around with it for a while?
You know, I read everything I could about Edmonia Lewis. There's a bibliography in the back of the book which cites all the sources that I used for the creation of the book. And I hunted and wrestled and backtracked and just scattered all around as much as I could before I could really find an approach to what I thought would be justice to Edmonia Lewis in the book. And that's how that series ended up. It ended up being a series of persona poems in the voice of the sculptures of Edmonia Lewis. And then in between that being another kind of narration of a woman that used to know Edmonia Lewis, but now runs a kind of medicine show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the creation, talking about the creator.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
When you think about this, of what you do, is the performance aspect of it important to you? You seem, well, first of all, you're just really great at it, but do you enjoy it? Is that an aspect of this that you think of as part of your job?
Well, you know, I do think about reading the poems out loud. And whenever I'm going through an editing process, one of the things I do is I read the poem out loud, because when I hear it, I can understand it better. It's almost like it assumes a different kind of life. But I also think that, you know, I think it's part of a poet's, it is part of the life of a poem when the creator of the poem reads the actual work. Mm-hmm. I think that the poet lends a kind of gives the poem another life when they render it from the page and into the air, you know, and some of that is from my, you know, my slam days. You know, you have to get up on front of a stage and read a poem in front of 200 or 300 people who are drinking and they got everything from the rent to their current romantic pursuit on their mind, and you have to grab their attention and make them get into that one poem for X amount of time and then get off the stage. So yeah, I'm interested in both the poem on the page, and I also want to do the poem justice when I attempt to bring it into the air.
Do you think about that it will always be for you a theme, in the sense of I'm going to look at this particular, whether it be Lead Belly or in this case in Olio, of these great musicians and orators? Do you think there will always be a theme, or do you someday see yourself just saying, all right, this one, we'll just do a typical old collection?
You know, I don't know. We'll see. I have poems that are not about, you know, historical figures, etc. It's just they just haven't collected necessarily a book of them, so to speak. So we'll see. You know, I think it's best for me to be a little bit surprised.
Do you worry that you won't be surprised? I mean, do you think that I'm doing this and maybe I've done this?
Yeah, I don't want to. I think every artist wants some surprise to lurk,
sure,
in the corners of their work, and sometimes you have to hunt for that surprise, and then it ends up being things that you didn't think were going to happen. That's really a source of growth and a source of excitement when something happens that you did not expect to happen, or when you take a route that you had said you were not going to do that thing, but you end up doing that thing because it's like the only way to get to the point where you want to get. So you have to wrestle between those two aesthetics.
When you go to campuses and meet with young people and you hear their work, does it give you great hope as to this art form?
Oh man, yeah. You know, poetry is, you know, people keep saying, there are all kinds of rumors about the death of poetry,
which have been going on for centuries.
And here we are. Poetry will be around as long as people dream and sing. So, you know, and when I look at the younger generations that are writing their poems, I see that so much creativity happening. I see so much electricity and new ways of approaching all kinds of issues in their work. So it's here to stay.
Tayemba Jess's new collection is Olio. It received the 2017 Pulitzer Prize. What a great pleasure having you on the program. Congratulations on the Pulitzer. Congratulations on the great work.
Thank you.
And a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Great to be here.
Thank you very much.
All right.
We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can also listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue. Well, she brought it in the morning, just a wild day. But she brought me the news, and my wife was dead. That started me to grieving, whooping, hollering, and crying. Then I began to worry about my bread a long time. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a heaven-loving light on me.